Thank you, Sue. Good afternoon. Last time I stood up here, I was the master of ceremonies at a launch of the advertiser's new car section, and someone actually drove me through those doors on the back of a Harley Davidson right up to here. So thanks for a rather more sober welcome today, Sue. I want to congratulate Sue. Last Sunday, the Variety Club, this is the engine room of the Variety Club, had a long lunch. If you call 12 till 5:30 long, well, yeah. Oh, you left at 6:15. I left at 5:30. Raised over $65,000 for the Crippled Children's Association. Fantastic lunch it was, and well done, sir. It's my pleasure merely to welcome everyone here today, particularly those who have not been to a press club lunch before. The club's been going for about 8 years. There was a debate about exactly when it started a few minutes ago, but we settled on 8 years. Apparently the negotiations to start it began in 1992 and finished in 1994, so you can make your own mind up. Normally we have merely a guest speaker. Today the format is slightly different, and we're going to have a panel of notaries debating what I think many people are interested in, and that is the direction and the future of South Australia. But for now, the main courses will be served, and I'll return shortly after 1 o'clock, 1 o'clock to get the debate going. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Rex. On behalf of the committee, I wish to acknowledge Telstra as a corporate supporter of the Press Club and thank its representatives for their ongoing support, and welcome those representatives who are here today. Today, SA Brewing have provided for your enjoyment Hahn Premium Light and West End Draft. Our wine sponsor is Orlando Windham, and today we are serving 2001 Jacobs Creek Reserve Riesling and 1999 Jacobs Creek Reserve Shiraz. Now, here's a date for your diary. Our next luncheon will be held on the 12th of July, Friday the 12th of July. We're back here at the Hyatt with guest speaker Wayne Jackson, Chief Executive of the AFL. Invitations will be posted out tomorrow, but if you'd like one as you leave, just grab one from out the front desk. If you're not on our mailing list for future functions, just let us know. Tell Alison at the front desk and we'll make sure that the information is mailed to you. Now, we have our little raffle to keep us in the black. Tickets are $2 each, or $3 for $5, cheap at half the price. We have two Telstra Panasonic cordless phones. We have from Walter Rogers, thank you, Walter, for a $50 voucher from the Rock Lobster Cafe in Gouger Street, that restaurant that specialises in southern rock lobster and other exotic seafood. We also have a $50 voucher from Rigoni's Bistro in Lee Street to enjoy some traditional and modern Italian cuisine, and a carton of Southwark Premium thanks to SA Brewing. So enjoy your lunch, and Rex Jory will be back to introduce the panel shortly. Thank you.
We have a panel of four today who will be questioned and put their point of view about the state of the state, and I dare say it's a broader picture, it's a gaze into the crystal ball about where South Australia is going. And I think it's appropriate that we start by introducing the panel. I can't see the order in front of you, so I'll simply fly into it as best we can. The Minister for almost everything apart from being Premier, the Honourable Dr. Jane Lomax-Smith. Would you like to come up? It hadn't occurred to me until... Good afternoon.
Yep. Lovely to see you.
Jane and I have been in a few debates. We were in one once when we lost, and I thought it was my fault, and then I was in one against her once, and then I realised it wasn't my fault. I took my clothes off once, yes, there was that one too, but that we'll go into that later. I didn't realise until almost this minute that the CEO of the Adelaide City Council, Susan Law, and Jane, of course, worked closely together until Jane moved on to other duties. Susan Law, please come forward. The technical director of Fusion Design, a man who has his pulse on the world of technology and where we're all headed, but I'm not even sure where we've come from in the last 5 years, as a matter of fact, John Chaplin.
John, nice to see you. How are you?
And the CEO of Business SA, a man whose contract, I understand, was renewed for another 2 years quite in the last week or so, Mr. Peter Vaughan. I think your contract's coming up, Susan, soon for renewal, is it? I better not go into that. My task today is to be the moderator. It's an ecclesiastical term, isn't it? I've never known what it means in the church, but I know what it means here. It means that I am the equivalent of Peter Lewis in the House of Assembly. So, and yes, I need a wig. You don't remind me. The process today, as I would see it, the format today, is that I might kick off asking one of the panel members a question, but ultimately we'll throw the panel on the mercy of the room. I would ask you, anyone who wants to ask a question, please keep it to a question and don't turn it into a political speech. It may happen up here, but I've got the power of Peter Lewis to order, cut them off, and I surely will. So please, if you can, keep your questions short. The past 10 years has probably been the most astonishing decade in history. We've seen some enormous changes, globalisation, the international growth of big business, the centralisation of decision-making into probably the hands of 8 cities around the world, all of them in the Northern Hemisphere. I'll ask Andrew Killey later to name the 8 cities. We've had the curious debate about genetic engineering and the enormous changes that have been made in the broad field of medicine. We've had advances in computer technology, which I am being left absolutely baffled by. I have no idea. I don't even know what log on means. And we've had the explosion of information and communications, the internet and so on. And probably the most significant is that we've had flooding in Australian rules football. But all these changes have really changed our lives at such a speed that many of us haven't been able to keep up with them. And it's been very difficult for a small economy such as South Australia, a regional economy, a fragile economy, a narrow economy, to remain viable and competitive when so many changes are being made so quickly. Changes which haven't been really within the ambit of this government and this community. And I guess that really is the question we're facing today, the panel are facing today. How has South Australia coped over the last decade? And more to the point, where are we going? And how are we going to maintain our competitive edge? How are we going to continue to grow? And how are we going to maintain the lifestyle that I guess pretty much everyone in this room at least does enjoy at the moment? I'll ask the first question. Two men, two women. We'll go alphabetic. I'll start with Peter V for Vaughan. Peter, if you were Harry Potter and for a day you were able to weave your magic, what changes would you make, or what decisions would you take to maintain South Australia's lifestyle and maintain South Australia's competitive edge in this new world economy?
Yes, well, get on my broomstick here, Rex, but first of all, I must say that we shouldn't sell ourselves short. If you look back over the last 10 years, I've said this publicly, in when the recession we had to have was had, according to Paul Keating, Sydney had a glitch, Melbourne had a recession, and Adelaide had a depression. And clearly, this state has pulled itself up by the bootstraps to probably the best situation it's been in the last 20 years. On any indicator that you'd like to look at, it has been a remarkable turnaround. And quite frankly, it's been done by South Australians alone, because I didn't see anybody leaping to our defence. So before we say anything, I think we should all give the state a big pat on the back for achieving an amazing result. An amazing result. So Rex says, if I'm Harry Potter for the day, this is what I do in the first day. I do something about the population. We're obviously not going to bed enough or doing enough in there, because in the decade of 1990 to 2000, whilst you were all depressed, everybody else was actually increasing in population terms at 1.2% per annum. We're only increasing by 0.5. So you out there, a lot of you weren't doing what you should have been doing between 5 and 9. That is the crucial issue for this state, I might add. It is the fundamental issue for South Australia. We have 1.5 million people stuck in the middle of the driest state and the driest land, and we've got to do something about it. And we need to get, in my view, federal and state governments coordinated to how we resolve the need for population growth in this state. Bob Carr has said in New South Wales, I do not ever want to see another migrant in Sydney. And the problem is how you keep them down on the farm, because that's where they all want to go, the bright lights of Sydney and Melbourne. And that's the other problem about our population. We will have, by the year 2010, the least number of people under 30. And the reason for that is the head offices are in Sydney and Melbourne, the lifestyle's in Sydney and Melbourne, and there's only so many times you go to have a nightclub to exhaust the gene pool. So there's got to be some way of dealing with that, and population, therefore, is a big issue. I think in any modern democracy, one of the biggest problems we face is the governments, for some reason, can't govern. I don't know about you, but I am fed up and sick and tired of going to the ballot box to elect a government that then spends 4 years unable to govern because it cannot get its mandate through the legislative process, and we call that a democracy. I have publicly described the Parliament of South Australia as a zoo. I think it is. I think we need a good culling of the animals, and I think we need to make sure that a few of them understand the need to let governments govern. And if we don't like what governments do at the end of the four-year term, then use that wonderful thing that we have in this country and fight for democracy and get rid of the bastards. But at least give them 4 years. So I'd give them 4 years. This government's been elected. It's been democratically elected. Get on with the job and run the state. I then fix up the universities. How is it in this state that we have a fight constantly to share a small pie between three universities which in combined size do not make up the total student intake of Monash? And if we are talking about a protected species, I've got to say this, university academics are the last protected species in Australia. So whilst I'm starting, Rex, and warming up, I'm only halfway through the day.
Well, it's almost half time in the Quidditch game.
I'd fix up once for all shock trading, as if two consenting adults can't buy a good or a service in South Australia as they can across the whole of the rest of the country, I don't know what we're doing. And we're a tourist state, and we've had tourists come to Business SA, shown us the money and said, I would have loved to spend money in your state, but no bloody place was open. And that's extraordinary. I then go on to the Adelaide City Council, and I'm sorry, Susan, but I'd have a minister for Adelaide, and I hope your contract is renewed in time for that to occur, because I really think that this state, given that 1.2 million people, you could throw a handkerchief over them from this room, demand really a minister for Adelaide to galvanise the gateway that Adelaide should be to the whole of this state. I'd fix up the airport, and finally, as I said, I'd allow the government to make some decisions, be judged by the decisions, and see us taking leadership in those decisions, and then go to the electorate and say, there, we've done something. Now, what do you want to do about it?
Thanks. Thanks, Peter. I want to throw the panel on the mercy of the room, but As people are getting their questions in order and thinking about it, I just want to ask Minister Lomax Smith to perhaps respond in some way to Peter, if you wish. But you're also the Minister of Small Business. I think 97% of businesses in South Australia are small businesses. They employ something like 50% of all people on the payroll. Do we, Minister, concentrate on small business, or do we try to attract the big-ticket industries that we seem to have been trying to attract for 30 years and only been partially successful in doing? And secondly, do we compete with Sydney and Melbourne, or do we get off that treadmill and turn ourselves into a regional city? This will be the last question I'm going to ask, unless the room goes silent. Those that wish to ask a question, please get ready to put your hands up.
I'm actually sick of people still talking about whether we compete with Sydney or not, because we're different and we're better, and we should concentrate on doing things differently and better. The idea that people will go to Sydney for lifestyle is almost so laughable, I can hardly believe that someone sitting next to me said it. You get pedestrian rage trying to get a taxi in that town, and if you actually get into a taxi and find someone who speaks English and can identify the map of the city, and you've had to struggle through giving them directions to get there, and you arrive 2 hours late, or you've missed your plane, and it's polluted, and the weather's awful. I mean, I really find it hard to believe it's a lifestyle destination. We have to say that Adelaide in South Australia is truly special, which it is. It looks different, it feels different, the culture is different, and we have centres of excellence. And like Peter, I don't believe we have three universally world-class universities. We have three universities with centres of excellence which are each world-class, but we shouldn't pretend that everything in South Australia is the best in the world. And I particularly dislike the euphoria, you know, the constant wish to say South Australia is great at everything. It's not. The smart thing to do is to recognise we need to have a strategic ability to pick the winners and put the skills development, the assistance packages, the infrastructure investment, and the political clout behind the things that are different and special and are likely to make us money in the future. And that is in some of our areas of research, and our universities actually do produce spin-off companies and small businesses and create wealth and create jobs. And we ought to be looking at the areas where we can look to, if you like, the new industries, because we have to be smart on our feet and not pretend, for instance, we are the IT capital of the world, the defence capital of the world. Just recognise we are, in fact, the defence capital of the world. We have, in fact, the best plant genomics work in the world, but actually only say it when we mean it and it's true, and recognise it and get behind it. So it's a matter of picking winners. The other issue is small business has a huge potential to do well, but let's stop calling it small business in a way you might call it independent business. Because there are people who want to go alone for their lifestyle, because they have courage and they want to do things differently, and they are swift of foot. They are inventive. But we have an unacceptable risk of failure in small business, and we all know that you're lucky to get one in five surviving the first decade of their existence. And we have to find ways of making sure that business is trained, business people are trained, and they survive to create wealth, because that's where wealth creation and job opportunities are. And in terms of giving money to bribe big companies to come here, it is futile, because it doesn't matter how much money you give, if people don't recognise it's a good place to live and their CEOs come here and we actually increase the population. And I don't think it's by breeding, because, in fact, it's not sex that produces a bigger population. It's keeping young people here in their formative years. It's recognising that women won't have children. It's not women's fault they don't want children. It's the system that's against them. It's not a fertility debate so much as a population debate about migration that we have never had. And the issue is, if only we stop people leaving, and if we attracted more people to the city, we'd be better off. And it's a migration issue that we want, not just sex, although that's something that maybe Peter wants to talk about.
I think Peter started a bit of a waterfall here down the table. I don't know whether you want to talk about sex, John, but Let's give John and Sue perhaps a say, because there are one or two issues in your sphere of interest, John, that have been raised by the first two.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things have been raised currently, but I think the issues that I face as a small business owner is that we do most of our work out of the state, and having dealt with Sydney and Victorian and overseas clients is not dealing with them on a day-to-day basis once we've won them as a client. They're more than happy dealing with us. The changes in communication and the internet and things like that have provided basically a South Australian-based company to their doorstep. You know, I can get home from the airport quicker than they can drive home out of the city from Sydney. But it's convincing them in the first place. And I think part of that is our own self-belief that we're as good as anybody is, but it's then convincing them outside the state. Further to that, the brain drain, as is often called, is often mentioned about creative people leaving our state. And I think that ties in with the combination of having good, solid, creative businesses that make people want to actually stay here and work. If there's not exciting jobs or exciting career prospects, they're going to leave to go to the big cities to get these opportunities. So it's a kind of a catch-22. We need good people, but we also need good firms and companies to work for. For example, we haven't lost too many people because we try to provide a really unique opportunity of employment, but we have lost two people interstate because their partners have had gone to seek other opportunities. So I think that's a self-perpetuating system, I suppose.
Susan, do we need a Minister of Adelaide? And would you like to apply for the job if the job comes up? We'd love to keep you here.
I prefer not to answer the second part of the question, but I'm really fascinated that we were talking about where's the state going. Every single panel member, including myself, has talked about Adelaide, and I'd like to say right here and now, I'm unapologetically Adelaide-centric, because the state is Adelaide. And unlike Peter, I think that I'd like to talk about some the more warm, fuzzy things. And I think what we would want to maintain in Adelaide or recapture in Adelaide is not necessarily business growth per se or economic growth per se or even people per se. But I think what we need to recapture back in Adelaide is the personality and behaviour of Adelaide people that made Adelaide the creative place it was back in the 1890s when it was one of the first places in the world to give women the vote. I think that we need to have the personality and behaviour of the Adelaide of the 80s and 90s when it was at the forefront of social reform. Somehow, and I think I'm still new enough to Adelaide to be able to say this, we've become timid, diffident and afraid to move forward, to progress, to be bold, to be courageous, and God help us, we might even make a few mistakes. We seem to have forgotten how to be that. And there was an article in a recent bulletin which really made me angry, and sort of things moved around my office fairly quickly. But basically it was written by an Eastern State journalist that said, look at silly old Adelaide. Here they are debating about what to do with an 80-metre piece of strip in the heart of the city. And they've been debating this since 1964. In the same time, Sydney has put a tunnel under the harbour, built the Opera House, and run the Olympic Games. And poor old Adelaide, and one can only see it as pathetic, hasn't even managed to resolve the debate about what to do with an 80-metre strip of road. And I think there is some, you know, while it made us angry, certainly made me angry, there is a certain amount of truth about that. Somehow we have lost, or we have not managed to maintain, the personality and behaviour of creativity on which the state was founded, the city was founded, and which was very, very evident in the 1980s and 1990s, when I wasn't even here.
Thank you. We'll throw it open to the room. We've got a microphone. Yes, you need one. In the middle of the room. Can you announce, give your name, any other detail you want to give, even where you're from, if you're from out of town, of course.
How dare you say that, Rex? Barbara Derham, wearing the hat at the moment of Chair of the Area Consultative Committee, which I may remind the panel, I'm sure our Minister knows that we represent 90% of this state, and my other colleagues represent the rest of the state. I'm absolutely astonished to hear the debate at the table. Our Minister, of course, knows what regional South Australia does. Now, you've said we do not have a debate, and I agree with that. So I'd like to ask the panel, particularly Susan, Peter and John, have you ever been out of Adelaide, number one? While I had 361 days of sunshine, but the rest of the area that I represent is a fabulous state. And Whyalla alone and the regional of South Australia exports $1 billion for this state. And with Port Lincoln and its agriculture, are you aware of what the state and your regional South Australia can do for you? Susan, may I ask that and direct the question direct to you, have you ever been to any regional cities in South Australia?
Yes, I have, and I've been to Whyalla.
Right, good. Well, I'm sorry I never had the pleasure of meeting you. The further question is to Peter, as a member of the council to the university, please tell me why you think there shouldn't be a regional university in South Australia to promote that for the young people that live in regions.
Your first answer question, by the way, I've been to Whyalla, Port Augusta. Port Augusta nearly killed me because the plane coming back nearly crashed outside of our light.
Been to Streaky Bay.
Yeah, great places too. And down at Mount Gambier as well.
Don't forget about them.
But bottom line, 1.2 million people out of 1.5 live in metropolitan Adelaide.
So what are you going to do about it?
And to answer to your question, well, one of the things is I might put a rabbit fence around just about Parafield if you keep going at me like that. But the question you raise about the universities is this. In a city like this, which should actually be one of the great advantages for Adelaide and for South Australians and regional South Australians, is that we should be seen as a city of education and research and excellence in those environments. And they are crucial. But you will never get that whilst you have three universities that want to always act independently and ignore the TAFE sector, which probably employs more people and educates more students than the universities do. What we need is a consistent, strategic plan for the positioning of this state and this city to be a centre for worldwide encouragement of young students to come here. Here's the crying shame. Three universities in this city, and we have less overseas students in Adelaide today than Perth do.
We have 52 of them in Whyalla.
Do you know, the thing that's really interesting about this argument about the city and the hinterland, if you like, is that Adelaide is absolutely dependent on regional and rural South Australia. 20% of the tourists who come to Adelaide are from South Australia. They come to the doctor, they come to the lawyer, they come to the royal show, they come to send their children to school, and they are crucial to the city because they bring wealth. And the city provides infrastructure and services for them. So the two cannot survive without each other, and we shouldn't set up this artificial divide. It's silly. We should get on with working out how we can leverage more for us all and not argue about who's getting more than someone else. It's a matter of bringing wealth into the state, and the city cannot survive without the regional areas. And we have to recognise that there are some extraordinary things. Whyalla has got cuttlefish, the cuttlefish capital of the Southern Hemisphere. Narracourt has a World Heritage Site. There are the most exciting and wonderful things in the state, but the city is the focus of a lot of intellectual and infrastructural energy, and they both need each other. So let's stop fighting about each other. If we spend the next 4 years arguing about amalgamating universities, we won't have moved one inch forward. We've got to find what we've got to make it work better, and this argument about the universities always arguing is absolute rubbish. I sit down day after day with them in collaboration, and this is last year, last month's, last decade's fight. And we've got to do something more imaginative than just move deck chairs.
I'm not going to let the panellists fight. Sir, you've got the floor.
Thank you. My name's Phil Ingerson, and I'm chairman of the IT Council for South Australia. Recently in South Australia, we've had the World Congress. We had the world looking at South Australia from an IT point of view. I was lucky enough to meet the chairman of, the mayor of Taipei, who in fact was promoting Taipei. There was also the people from Fairfax County there who had been the previous, before Taipei, holders of the World Congress. My question really is what the Congress seemed to do, or did do, I believe, is put Adelaide on the map. But the question is, where did it go from here? And I think my question relates to what is the government's role, or if we're talking about the state of the state, what's the state's role in stimulating industry or opportunities as a result of those sorts of things that we've brought here, but we need to capitalise on?
I'll start the answer. I think one of the issues that we have as part of the small business community is we hear the espoused discussion from government about supporting small business and the idea of intellectual property and all those kind of issues. Yet when large tenders that go out for IT infrastructure and IT support, they often either leave the state or they're awarded or contracted to large US-based companies. Now, if we're all espousing that, you know, we've got this self-belief and we can believe in a local business to provide these services, then I think government should be standing up and actually putting their money where their mouth is and actually using firms such as ourselves and a collective of other great companies that are producing some amazing technologies. And sure, they are using that, but too often it either goes to the Sydney or overseas and not in our own backyard. The other thing I also think is we always talk about intellectual property and the importance of small businesses, particularly maintaining this intellectual property, yet every government contract we've ever been awarded, we've had to hand over our intellectual property to the government, and I think that's somewhat hypocritical.
Anyone else want to pick up a brief line on the panel? No? Sorry?
One of the things about bringing conferences here, and of course the government puts a lot of money into getting them here, is actually being smart about what they do when they come. And with my tourism hat, because of airline failure, terrorism, it's very difficult to get tourists now into Australia, and numbers have fallen slightly over the last 6 months. And so it makes a lot of sense to make sure that once you've got them here and they get off the plane, they're not allowed to get back on too soon. So one of the things we can do is make sure they stay longer to do something in regional or rural South Australia, and that we market before they actually arrive to know the festival's on. Most of the people at Whitchit didn't even know the festival was on. And if you're a CEO from Silicon Valley, the last thing you can do is decide to stay for 3 days longer once you arrive and read the festival program. And it's really dumb not to do the heavy-duty marketing before they leave home. And the other thing that I think is a really important issue to do with intellectual engagement is to recognise that sometimes we bring conferences to Adelaide or the Barossa Valley or even Whyalla, and we have a world-class mind that is bringing a keynote address, and we let them come to the conference and leave. So what I want to do is actually get onto a sort of meeting of minds and make sure that if someone is really important, they meet the relevant minister. They might meet the premier. They might meet the captains of industry, because I don't want to let them out until they've spent money, occupied a bed, had an intellectual engagement with someone in Adelaide, in South Australia, who can benefit from that experience, because it's our money that's brought them here, so we want to get the most out of them.
Susie O'Brien from the Advertisers got the microphone.
This is a question to Dr. Jane Lomax-Smith, a representative of the government. What's the government going to do about shop trading hours?
Well, I'll answer that in two ways. The government will negotiate and talk to the people who are involved, and you know that's not me. It's not my role or responsibility. But I have to say, as an observer, and this is not my portfolio area, I have yet to meet a tourist who comes to South Australia because they want to go to a shopping mall. And I have yet to meet a tourist who wants to go to a seven-day shopping mall to buy bedding. Mostly they come to see the sights. And if you travel around the world and you're in Salzburg or New York or London, they do have restrictive shopping hours, and it's not the end of civilization as we know it. And there's another interesting point about regional areas and strict shopping. I understand that to turn over $1 million in a small shopping precinct, you have 50% more employees. That's 50% more jobs than in a big shopping centre. And you might say, if you're an economic rationalist, that that's inefficient, but they're jobs.
Is it John Mitchell at the...
That is indeed, Rex. I know you said no statements.
No, thank you.
Phil Ingerson talked about the significance of the World Congress, which was known very, very widely as being the Olympic Games of the business world. And I'd just like to point out that the most significant publicity that the advertiser gave it was from an academic who called it a complete wank. And I found that very, very disappointing. I think that if we're going to try and get people in this state to understand the importance of this state and what it can do, we need to get stronger support from a media organisation like the Advertiser, rather than have it virtually ignore an event that was as significant as the World Congress was.
I don't imagine any of the panel are going to defend me, but...
Far be it from me to defend the Advertiser. But I thought they'd covered it reasonably well. I would not personally have complained. Every day there was an article, there was a different angle, it felt positive. I mean, I don't like to defend them, but...
Please, just this once. Thank you, Jane, for that.
Cliff Walsh, emeritus.
G'day,
professor.
Cliff, how are you? I recognise you. You're looking younger every day.
Well, I'm now retired from the university.
That's why.
There are about 100 things that people have said that I'd like to talk about, including how you actually go about getting a more effective university here in South Australia. But I'd like to focus on a point that I think Susan started to to raise very strongly. There are four words that I absolutely love. They're innovation, entrepreneurship, creativity and excellence. 10 years ago, I came back to South Australia when the little report came out, and I think it was fair comment that most people here thought that genteel decline was the best way for South Australia to go. Notwithstanding advances in the last decade, I don't see that that's changed. I'd like to hear from the panellists what they think we can actually do to make South Australia a more dynamic, a more creative, a more entrepreneurial state. Not just in economic dimensions. This isn't about science and technology alone. This is about everything that we do in this state. And it seems to me fundamental to our capacity to compete within Australia, let alone in a globalised market.
Thank you. I couldn't have said it better myself. And I do believe that if we get the personality and the behaviour of the people of Adelaide and indeed the state, in a progressive, courageous, confident way, then the economic benefits, the growth will occur. You know, one doesn't happen without the other. I think that there is a big role that the City Council, as the sort of city leadership, has to play in this. And that's why it's very important the City Council doesn't confine itself to the role of just collecting the rubbish around the place. And I just remembered I didn't actually answer the question about the Minister of Adelaide. I've said this to Peter, and so he won't be offended if I say it to him again. I think he's got the right issue, but he's got the wrong solution. The right issue is that there needs to be a single-minded focus on the city as the gateway to the state, to call my friend in Wyala. And it's the leadership role that's important. It's not the provision of the services that the council undertakes that's important, although it is, but anyone can do those. Anyone can collect the rubbish. Anyone can and does, you know, weed the flower beds and mow the grass in the parklands. But the critical role of a council is provide that civic leadership to actually mimic or to model the behaviour of confidence, courage, boldness and progress. And I really don't believe a community takes on those attributes until it sees it in its civic leadership, its state leadership, and maybe even federal leadership.
All right, well, Mike, I've just got a few points. I think you brought up an issue of entrepreneurship, and I think that's a big thing. Too often, young people are encouraged to, you know, get the job and go out and work for somebody else, and I think if there's some, at an early age, some type of fostering of an entrepreneurship and encouragement and support for people to go into business, and, you know, some type of blanket or, you know, safety net, if you like. Business education, which I think the government have been doing for a number of years, but increase that, some things like the success factor and fast track courses, because like myself and my business partner, when we formed our business, we were creatively good at what our skills were, but we had absolutely no idea about running a business, and understanding the issues of running a small business was valuable from an education point of view. And then once those businesses are established, provide further support for those businesses to do business within the state, outside of the state, and overseas, so that we can, you know, attract more people here and more dollars here.
Yes, I think the important thing is to recognise that in a civil society, it's not just about making money and jobs, it's about creating a society that can support those endeavours, so that in building the state from where it is now, obviously we don't want to have 7,000 homeless people on the streets. We don't want people queuing to get basic health care, and we want people to have a decent education, because investing in people will make a difference. It's also about recognising that many people have skills, and it's to do with the gene pool again, and that's why a lot of the appointments that have been made since the election have not been of traditionally Labour supporters, because there's a recognition that in this state there are not enough people to have the skills to do all the jobs, and people have valid ideas, and so you have to recognise that the gene pool will be is small, and we have to use everyone's skills. So it's using everyone to the maximum capacity and making sure that we invest in skills, education, continuing learning, lifelong learning, and making sure that we are nimble enough to take opportunities. And the opportunities for this state are relatively obvious. We are of the size of a Boston. We are a learning city. We have education. We have a very highly skilled workforce. We have the opportunities. But we have to recognise there are special things we have, and probably in dry land management, water conservation, looking at ways to be innovative and green, because we have major problems in providing energy in this state, and that's a very good way to provoke creativity. The fact that we have environmental values that are important should inform our research, because our money in the future will come from ecotourism, it will come from aquaculture, it will come from grains and fruit and a whole range of products. So our environment is critically important for our future as an industrial base, if you like. And if we in any way damage it, we have lost that advantage in the future. So environmental sustainability and science around that is a marketable resource that we should be looking at. And if we can do anything to value add any of the environmental values we have in the city, it will be money in the bank in the long run. And that's why having a nuclear dump here is the dumbest thing you could ever have. We can't produce food and wine for the world in a suspicious global environment if we have a contaminated state. So those values are ones that I think we should put energy and enthusiasm in, because that's where the money is. That's where the opportunity is.
A lot of what everybody said is just good, plain common sense. I'd just like to add a couple of things. One of them is that we should stop using what I call the Vanuatu option of dealing with South Australia. And that is, Vanuatu's got a great lifestyle. It's wonderful. The sun shines every day, but you don't want to live there. Your kids can't grow up and be educated, and you certainly wouldn't have it as a lifetime career, because there aren't too many head offices. And that's the difference. What I think is the wonderful benefit of the South Australian lifestyle is that's what you get as the added bonus when you've made the tough decision to set up here, migrate here, whatever the case may be. That is the bonus factor. People do not, by and large, come to South Australia for the lifestyle alone. Other factors that bring them there. And in the same way, if Sydney is so bad and Melbourne is so bad, then why are the statistics showing that our people between 20 and 30 are galloping to those places with all the pollution and all the problems and all the difficulties? The answer is because they've got career paths, because they have lifestyles, because they have things that attract them to make a living and a future for themselves. What we have to do is create an environment in this state where those things become a way of life, and the added adjuncts of the beautiful lifestyle we lead are just, well, there's the bonus you get for being here. And one of the areas where I think we have to really, in South Australia, rethink our way of life and thinking is we've got to stop dealing with what I would call corporate welfare, be it big or small. Why must we always think that government has to provide the solution? Why must we always say, when anybody says, what are you going to do? Well, what's the government going to do to help me? Why must we say that Jane Lomax-Smith and Mike Rann and all of the colleagues who make up the government have to do all the leadership and provide all the answers before we do it ourselves? I am sure, Susan's point, the pioneers and the people who founded South Australia did it without the government, because there probably wasn't much around, and in any case, did it despite government in large part. And that is what, in my view, is innovation is all about. Because if we don't do that, we will succumb to what I think is a feeling in South Australia, and I'll be bold enough to say this, having lived here now for 5 years and bought property and love it, the situation in South Australia, this is the most socialised state in Australia. But it wasn't a Labor government that socialised it. It was Tom Playford. And he gave that overriding socialisation, did everything a great Labor Premier would do. Dunstan gave it the civilised gloss, and everything went well until the real world caught up in the 80s and 90s, and we have not recovered as a society from the view that government must always dig us out of the doo-doo. The answer is, in some cases it can't, and in some cases it doesn't want to, and we do have to stand on our own 2 feet.
I've got Miles Kemp from the Advertiser to ask a question. Jane, are you happy to stay for a minute or two more? Got your sprinting shoes on?
Miles is there, I'm okay.
Okay.
A question for Dr. Lomax-Smith. Unemployment projections from your department, I'm just wondering what advice they've given you on what those projections are, or employment projections, I should say, a year from now, 5 years from now. And secondly, each minister has a folder or a list of hot issues that they prepare for Parliament before Parliament sits each time in case they get some nasty questions from the opposition. I'm just wondering if you'd be full and frank with the audience about the issues that each department has listed in your hot issues folder.
You know, I probably know more about dead camels than anyone else in this room. And nobody has asked me about it in Parliament any day this week, so I'm ever expectant. The issue about what is hot is often, I think, a reflection of what's in the media. And as far as I can tell, they're the issues that we see that have been raised recently. And the details are not hot because something appalling has happened. It's just what are current issues. So I don't know quite what you expect to have as a hot spot. As far as employment projections are concerned, the data is actually quite interesting in South Australia because although our employment figures have gone up, we have had over the last decade an increasing casualisation and part-time nature of employment. So the actual numbers, in raw numbers, are up, but the underlying impact on the community is not as rosy as it looks on the surface. And the data is not as obviously readable as you see when you first talk about the headline unemployment figures. So South Australia has got a 3% lower participation rate than the rest of the country, which means that although we've had a lowish unemployment rate, it masks people who've given up, abandoned hope, and it covers up the fact that we've had a minuscule rise in full-time jobs, so that the projection is that unless something happens, that there will still be part-time jobs only, and that's the forward view of the analysts.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I want to know about camels.
I'm going to take a firm grip here and say, Jane, you do have to go. thank you for your participation. We're not going to let the rest of the panel rest for another couple of minutes, but could you join with me in saying thank you to the Minister and a very busy schedule.
Catherine Downey Armstrong, Australian Consolidated Press. Sue, this is a question that is a long and contentious one that doesn't seem to go away, the Rundle Mall. It is a focal point for tourism and, you know, the major hotels, the cinemas, everything is around that area. But it continues to be dull, dreary, and after dark, not very safe. What can we do to reignite the interest in that strip of land that, you know, we're 19th century architecture, when it was locked into the North Terrace precinct architecture and a continuation of that mode of looking at interaction? Where have we gone wrong with the Rundle Mall? I know that throughout the world, malls have fallen into a lot of trouble. And perhaps we're not any different from any other major shopping precinct. Can you tell me where we plan to go with a focal point for tourism, for shopping, you know, swimsuit when the weather changes, that sort of thing?
Thank you. Rundle Mall, I think, where we went wrong is we think of it solely as a retail strip, as a shopping strip. And with Peter's issue, with non-deregulated shopping hours, of course, once 5:30 comes, you can, as you rightly say, fire a gun down Rundle Mall. The council doesn't view Rundle Mall as a retail strip. It doesn't even see Rundle Mall as the premier retail strip of South Australia. It actually sees Rundle Mall as a precinct and a public place that people can use. And over the next few years, I'm just a little bit cautious about what I'm saying here, because I've got my general manager sitting on the table shaking their heads at me. But what we're saying about Rundle Mall is we do need to treat it as public space that we want people to visit, people to spend time in, people to do more than pick up their dry cleaning and go shopping in. And so the Rundle Mall strategic framework that we've developed and are implementing will, over the next few years, look at the mall for the 21st century, not just as a shopping strip. The other thing that's going to, I think, impact quite significantly on Rundle Mall is the North Terrace redevelopment. And while it's a matter of discussion with the state government at the moment, but part of the rationale for undertaking the North Terrace redevelopment wasn't just so we'd have a fabulous-looking boulevard on which our 19th-century institutions sit, but it was, in fact, to create the links and the linkages between Rundle Mall, where people will spend time, some of it retailing, and then moving, spilling over and easily moving through into North Terrace and vice versa. So it all becomes a usable public space, a vibrant public space, not just a strip of shops where one might do the shopping, and when the shops are shut, there's nothing there.
We've probably got time for a couple more questions.
Well, my name is Barbara Adams, and my background is running childcare centres, and I didn't know when I got in the queue that Jane was going to leave, but I hope someone will fill her in. She said she'd yet to meet someone that came here to shop. Well, I have to tell you that the New South Wales president of Child Care Associations came to Australia, to Adelaide, sorry, and she went shopping in Rundle Mall, and she just loved the Myer Centre. And 10% of our income in childcare is spent on equipment, right? So she went back to New South Wales and she persuaded a huge contingent to come to Adelaide for the conference that we were having to go shopping in Rundle Mall. Well, when the president first came to visit, there was an experimental opening on the weekends in Rundle Mall happening. This is in the mid-1990s.
We need to get to a question.
When she came back with a contingent, there was no Rundle Mall. They stayed in this very hotel. They went down there Sunday morning. Everything was dead, and they were absolutely devastated. And they would have spent probably up to $100,000 here in South Australia. So I'm sorry I'm not asking a question because Joan's gone. But she said she'd never met anybody who came here to shop. I go to Melbourne to shop. I go to Sydney to shop. I rest my case.
Peter Vaughan will want 2 seconds on that one, I'm sure. That's all you're going to get.
Yeah, that's all I'm going to get. And, I mean, that just proves the point, and I keep saying it. In today's world, to not allow consenting adults and whoever else to actually trade goods and services at any time they like, let the market decide, let the customers decide, let the consumers decide, that's the answer, and not allow a situation where you could fire a cannon down Rundle Mall and not hit anybody, because the reason is the city's dead, because of the lack of shopping and availability, because that's what attracts people.
That's 2 seconds, Steve. Frederick Tobin, keep it brief and no political statements, please.
Right. Peter, you're talking about education. If you're talking about universities having to be large, you realise, of course, that bureaucratising universities is the death knell of dissent. And if you realise that Oxford University, Heidelberg and so on, they're small universities. If you've got 3 universities in Australia, in South Australia, then it is possible to make them beautiful as well, if you get rid of the bureaucracy, because South Australia has been known as the state of dissent.
Is there a question here?
The question is that I think your population matter needs answering and or perhaps a response from you. Do you think that's the legacy of the Dunstan era?
I don't understand the question, to be honest. And I don't need to have it again. But I think you've had your turn, the gentleman behind you.
Well, be honest. Be intellectually honest.
I am. I'm being very intellectually honest. I'm too dumb to understand the question.
Mr. Acting President, Robert Main is my name. I'd just like to give you a little bit of background about this. I'm a committee member of this club, and I must admit I was a bit dubious about whether this thing would work when we had a committee meeting about it a few months ago. But it has, and you know, the fact we've got more than 200 people here is a great credit, I think, to...
You got a question, Rob?
God, yes, I have. I'm coming to it. Just be quiet. I'm going to say something about you.
That's why I want you to ask a question.
You should also, fellow members and guests, appreciate that Rex, in addition to helping produce the Advertiser every night, puts a lot of time into what we do here, and I think we owe him a debt of gratitude. Please thank him. I was also very impressed by the thought that the 4 panel members have put into today's events, and that's leading up to the question. Peter Vaughan started off by giving us a very reasoned case for what's going on in South Australia. One of the points that Peter made was the issue of the authority of governments to govern. And I think that one of the big problems we've got in this country is that the federal government, okay, this is slipping away a bit from the state issue, the federal government reigns for 3 years. In fact, the average, I think Rex, is about 22 months, isn't it? There's a very strong case, I think, for 4-year terms of the federal parliament, which would give this state in particular a lot more stability in what we do. I'd like to ask the 3 remaining members of the panel, or whatever Rex likes, to comment on that issue, because I think it's very important. We need stability in government. That means federal government, it means state government, but it means confidence in business. So my question there, Rex, please address it to whoever you wish. And thank you very much for all of you for being with us today.
Who's going to grab that one quickly?
Yeah, I actually think from a small business point of view, I think it's a good idea. I think a government is only good if it's got enough guts to actually implement some change and not be afraid that they've got some time to actually implement it. So I'm right behind it.
I guess I would have to say that we need to let the government govern too. I think in the state that we're sometimes paralysed by discussion and debate constantly. I think there is a time when consultation is used as a substitute for decision-making and accountability, and we actually make the government do that. I think that we do need to let government govern and leaders lead.
This is this club is run by 2 gorgeous mother hens, Judith Bleachmore and Sue Fraser. There's typically South Australian, everyone gets up at the end and queues up to ask the question. How many more can we get, Judith? Keep the question very quick and the answers very quick, please.
Speaker Rex, Russ Stiggins from Right Media.
You haven't lost any weight, Russ, have you?
No, I haven't. No. I've had as much weight loss as you've had hair loss.
I knew.
We rehearsed that.
We did. Get into it.
Peter Vaughan, a question to you. We're talking about the need to bring big money into South Australia. and we've had a minister here today say that we should not be a repository for radioactive waste. Indeed, there is a lot of money in dealing with radioactive waste, and having dealt with organisations such as Western Mining Corporation and the Mines and Energy South Australia, I can tell you that some of the safest land to place even high-level radioactive waste resides in South Australia. Now, should we not be looking at this as a potential income generator for South Australia? My understanding from scientists is that the handling of it is safe. The emotional issues are large, but this may well be something that we can do. What's your response?
Thanks, Russ.
That's a question that could take half an hour, but the quick response from me is that I understand this debate really took place some 20 years ago in one form with Roxby Downs, and that there was a close-run thing in Parliament, and that this state's whole economic future would not have been as it now is if that decision hadn't been made in Parliament. And I think you're quite right. The debate now becomes between emotion and fact. The emotional debate has been taken over by the government, and clearly that they are running a high-risk strategy in relation to referendums before elections if the federal government goes ahead with its intentions. I think the federal government will, and the ultimate deciders will be the people of this state.
But would you agree that it could be worth billions of dollars to us?
There is no doubt that the mining industry, and that's part of it, is an absolutely essential part of the South Australian economy and the future of regional South Australia in particular. And you can't walk away from that, and it's a debate that should be had in rational circumstances.
But also in terms of a repository, which is not a mining issue.
Yes.
Thanks, Russ. Ron Dent, last question. We'll have to make it. It's my clock says it's exactly 2 o'clock, and we promised.
Ron Dent, Business Life. He won't shut up, so I'll get on with it. Most people's questions have answered my very well-researched stuff. The one topic that hasn't been touched, I'd just be interested in views from the panel and or anyone else in the room as to the continued importance of the arts in the South Australian psyche, and in the branding of South Australia in the state and overseas.
I think the arts are critically important. It's very much how Adelaide people, South Australian people, currently define themselves. I do think the brand isn't so much about the arts as creativity in general. We are creative in a whole range of areas now, in the way we do business, in our IT industry, in our biotech industry. It's creativity, it's not just the arts, but the arts are inextricably linked with that.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I don't think anybody could underestimate the importance of the Adelaide Festival in the whole recognition of Adelaide as a city, not only in Australia but internationally. And every time now, given the multimedia and the technology, that we put that at risk, we put enormous damage into the brand. And therefore, the future of arts festivals and the way we deal with the arts culture in South Australia is absolutely an imperative for the new government, because make no mistake about it, Perth and Melbourne and Sydney are running hard to take the mantle that would naturally have fallen to the Adelaide Festival in the past. They claim that they are running festivals better than, bigger than, more attractive with, and they're doing it deliberately to move and cut away from Adelaide's positioning. And in my view, that is an essential part of your branding that just must be protected at all times in this state.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've got to draw this experimental press club lunch to a halt. I agree with Robert Main in almost everything, apart from my own appearance, that this has been a success. I'd like you to join with me in thanking the remaining three quarters of the panel, and Jane in her absence, for their participation. I personally would like to thank all of you, those who did ask questions and those who had questions on their lips or on their face. It's been remarkable that I haven't seen one person leave the room today. for other reasons. They've stayed because, I'm sure you've stayed because it has been an absorbing discussion between people who were of diverse views. In fact, I'm not sure that Peter and Jane will be doing anything to increase the population. Not together, anyway, no. Thank you, panel, and thank you to you all, especially those that have attended a press club function for the first time. We do have another lunch in July. It's of a different nature. It's a little bit more about flooding in the forward lines. The chief executive of the Australian Football League, Wayne Jackson, I can tell you how old Wayne Jackson is. I went to school with him. We played footy together in the same side. So Wayne will be here on July 12. I don't think this is the venue, but one of my... It is. We're back here again. We're expecting a big crowd for that, and already football clubs are booking in. So anyone who is interested in coming to listen to Wayne Jackson, the chief executive of the AFL, a South Australian now running the biggest sporting operation in Australia, I would advise you to get your bookings in early, and we may be able to throw him open to questions also. But for today, thank you all very much for attending. I hope you've enjoyed it. Thanks to our sponsors, and we look forward to seeing you on July 12. Now, there's a couple of household duties, which perhaps I'll turn over to you, Sue. And thank you all very much.
Just before we draw the raffle, I'd like to say something, given today's discussion, wearing my other hat as the Executive Director of the Variety Club, because I've just returned from the International Convention in Palm Springs, the Variety Club International, the greatest children's charity in the world. And it was my pleasure to present for the Variety Club of South Australia. And we've been voted again as one of the top 10 variety clubs in the world, which is really quite spectacular given our small population base. We were just behind Detroit, New York and Vancouver on a performance on a per capita basis. I don't mean this to sound egotistical, but I would just like to say that I was again asked to be the international liaison for executive directors worldwide, and my very good friend Chris Osterman was also asked to be the international liaison for chairman worldwide. We are both South Australians, and we didn't get there by just being a good-looking bird. So I'd just like to say that South Australians can perform on the world stage, so be proud of ourselves. I would like to ask Laurie Mortimer, who is the general manager of Telstra Countrywide. Laurie, come on up and draw the raffle. Now, given six worlds, what we have here, Laurie has given us, is a Telstra Panasonic cordless, a Telstra Panasonic cordless phone. And Laurie, tell us who's won that.
I have a blue ticket E76.
Who has got that one? Who's got a blue ticket E76? Over there? Judith? That way.
I was close to it. Thank you.
Okay. For another one of the Telstra phones.
And this won't be a blue ticket. And I have an orange ticket this time, E68. And it...
Over there.
Terrific.
E68's over there. Okay. Walter Rogers, where are you, dear man? Come on up. Walter's got the $50 voucher from the Rock Lobster Cafe in Gouges Street for some lovely seafood.
This is a green ticket, A60.
No, A60. Anybody got A60? A green ticket? Quick, up the back.
Good, Paula.
And for the second voucher from Walter, the $50 voucher from Ragoni's Bistro in Lee Street. And if you haven't been there for a while, get on down for some lovely Italian.
And this one's a purple ticket, E57.
Here we go. E57, come on up. And finally, for the carton of Southwark Premium, thanks to SA Brewing.
And this one's a blue ticket, E73. And it's Laurie Mortimer. So I'll draw it again. So this time we have a purple ticket, E69.
Purple ticket, E69. Where are you? Up there, up the back. Oh, Rimmer, from the Women's and Children's Hospital. Dr. Rimmer Sturgis.
A much more deserving winner.
Thank Laurie Mortimer from Telstra Countrywide. Thank you. Okay, before you go, just remember that date, Friday the 12th of July for Wayne Jackson. Hope to see you here. Thank you for your attendance today. Thank you.